Order today is Wednesday, April 11th, 2007. We are having a public hearing on House Bill 5038, which is the Office of Private Health Partnerships. Today we're going to be having testimony, and for those of you that would like to testify today, and I will come back to this during some interval of time, and for those people who would like to sign up to testify today, I'd like for you to use the sheet to my left over here. So maybe also, if you see new people coming in, you can say that as well. I'd like to call Ms. Lene Martin and Ms. Cheryl Wilcoxon. Ms. Wilcoxon here? Please, you can get started.
My name is Linnea Martin, and thank you for giving me a chance to talk to you on behalf of FIAP. I'm 59 years old. I'm college and university educated, and until recently I had a good job, excellent benefits, and better than adequate retirement account. In 2000, at age 52, I received a graduate degree in library information science from the top school in the country, and I hope to join the development staff of a major research university. Then I lost my job, a close friend of many years, and my mother in 2 short months. For the first time in my life, I didn't bounce back. In 2002, when I had exhausted my COBRA benefits, I went without health insurance, also for the first time in my life. I used my savings and money I inherited from my parents to pay the cost of living. I come from a very healthy family. I had all 4 grandparents until I was 28 years old. My parents lived a long time and enjoyed a good life. My sister and brother are both in excellent health. I told myself the risk that I was taking was minimal. In 2003, I decided to move to Oregon, to Portland, and start over again. Even though I had worked as a part-time librarian in Illinois, the fact that I was making part-time and not full-time use of my degree meant that my education was quickly becoming outdated. I did not receive offers for full-time library positions, and I was afraid to go after development jobs. I did not quickly find employment in Portland. After successfully or unsuccessfully trying to work in areas in which I had real experience, I decided a job for which I was overeducated was better than no job at all. I went to work part-time as a sales clerk for Meyer & Frank at $9 an hour. When a full-time position opened up on my floor in January of 2006, I took it. I liked my job. Meyer & Frank also offered excellent health insurance benefits. However, I earned just $875 a month, which is about $11,000 a year, and health insurance cost $200 a month. I could not afford it, and neither could most of the people that I worked with. I was becoming more and more nervous about the fact that I had not had a physical exam in 4 years, but I didn't know how to connect the dots between my paycheck and the cost of health insurance. I began asking people I knew if there were any organizations that helped low-income Oregonians pay for health insurance. I found out about FIAP through the insurance agent of a friend. FIAP evaluated my health insurance options, told me that the plan I was most interested in met their standards, and I enrolled. Based on my income, FIAP determined that 95% of the cost of my health insurance premium should be subsidized. I paid $10 a month and assumed responsibility for doctor and prescription drug copays and a $200 deductible. FIAP and Blue Cross Blue Shield took care of the rest. As soon as I had medical insurance, I made an appointment for a physical exam and a mammogram. In July of 2006, I was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer, the same week as my sister. There is no history of breast cancer in our family. My sister was diagnosed stage 0. She had had yearly mammograms. I was diagnosed stage 1. I had not. I cannot imagine what breast cancer would have been like without FIAP. Being diagnosed with cancer, as I'm sure some of you know, is a very surreal experience, even with a good diagnosis and wonderful doctors. First, there are lots of appointments with specialists of all kinds whose areas of expertise you know almost nothing about. Then there are mountains of brochures, information, and statistics we must read and try to understand. Then there is the advice and concern of family and friends. And then, there, of course, there is your own fear and the pressure to process everything into a decision you won't ever be sorry about quickly, so the doctors can begin operating before the cancer spreads. My prognosis is good. My tumor was slightly larger than expected, but the doctors found no evidence of cancer in my lymph system. I had partial breast radiation. I did not need chemo. Because my cancer was hormone positive, I will take Arimidex for the next 5 years to reduce hormone production in my body. Without health insurance, this drug costs $278 a month. With health insurance, it costs $20 a month, still quite a lot. The chances that I will die of breast cancer are slim. I just received my six-month checkup and I am cancer-free. Because I have good health insurance and good doctors, I was able to take advantage of the latest technology. My doctors know, beyond any information a mammogram could give them, that I do not now have any cancer cells growing in my body. Because I have good health insurance, this was a $1,700 experience, not a $100,000 experience, which is what I would have been charged if I had not been insured. I feel Fiat saved my life. I can't imagine what it would have been like to go through this experience without confidence in the quality of the medical care I received. In January of this year, Meyer & Frank, now Macy's, closed the doors of its downtown store. I left the retail business with my health insurance, now COBRA, covered by FIAP at 95%. I am now in the process of starting my own business as a personal assistant in Northwest Portland. Within the year, I hope to be making $17,000 a year and be able to pay, start paying for my own health insurance. Within two years, I hope to be successful enough to begin focusing my business in areas that draw heavily on my education, experience, and interests. In the meantime, before I reach my financial goals, FIAP will continue to subsidize the cost of my insurance. I am enormously grateful to the state of Oregon for that. I realize Oregonians are born, not transported, transplanted. Mm-hmm. However, I want you to know that I will give back more to the people of this state than I have taken from them. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for this program.
Thank you very much for your testimony and congratulations on being cancer free.
Yes, congratulations. That's good news. And just so you know, Seaside's building a new library, and although they have one library, and I'm sure we could use two.
All right.
Do you want to move to my district?
Thank you. Ms.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Ms. Martin, for your testimony. Was your you have an individual plan, or was this part of a plan connected with your employment at Meyer & Frank?
It was part of a plan connected with my employment, but it is moving toward, as I become my own employer, as I start my own business, if I don't financially move beyond, if I don't make more than $17,000 a year, I would fall into the individual, I guess I'm trying to say.
Thank you. So, follow up?
Both.
Go ahead. How long is your COBRA?
18 months.
18 months. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Coxon?
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Wilcoxon. I am the director of the Home Care Union Benefit Board. We call ourselves HUB. HUB is a subsidiary of SEIU Local 503. And the purpose of HUB is to administer the health insurance program for Oregon home care workers who are represented under a labor contract between the Oregon Home Care Commission and SEIU. And I'm here today to testify of a partnership that between our group, our Home Care Union Benefit Board program, and the FIAP program, and how we're working together to benefit home care workers and their family members with health insurance. Beginning in 2004, HUB introduced employee-only coverage to Oregon home care workers. This coverage was funded through the state of Oregon under the labor contract with SEIU. And in 2005, FEOP and HUB began to work together to develop a program whereby home care workers could enroll their family members in the HUB insurance program and apply to FEOP for help to pay the premium for their family members. Under the HUB-FEOP partnership, home care workers who are enrolled in HUB insurance now can enroll their dependents, their children, their spouse, and they can apply to FEOP to qualify for a monthly premium subsidy. If they're approved by FEOP, then home care workers can receive anywhere from 50 to 95% premium subsidy from FEOP, and the home care worker then pays the balance of the premium for their family members. After working for a year, maybe a little more, in 2006, we introduced this program to family members of home care workers. And this partnership has made health insurance accessible and affordable for dependents of our home care workers. Here's an example of how that works for a home care worker. If the cost to the home care worker to cover family members, the total family, spouse and children, is $825 a month, and the home care worker qualifies because of income limitations for a 95% subsidy, then the home care worker pays $41 a month, and the FEOP premium subsidy pays the balance. This has been a tremendous advantage for our home family members of our home care workers who otherwise would not have access to health insurance because of the cost. FEOP and HUB have worked together on a number of issues. We work together on the communication of the program. HUB includes FEOP information and the FEOP application in all of our enrollment packets. We work together to determine eligibility, and we work together to make sure that the insurance companies get the correct amount of premium that is due for those individuals that are enrolled. Currently, we have about 3,500 home care workers enrolled in the program and over 200 dependents in the program. Of the 200 dependents, 175 of those are subsidized by the FEOP program. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions before?
I'm interested in the mechanics of how the premium, the portion of the premiums that the applicants pay are transferred to FEMOP. Do you collect that in a central location, or do each of the enrollees remit that separately?
Representative Morgan and the committee, the HUB office actually administers how much premium is due, because it's our office that determines the home care workers that are eligible and the dependents that are eligible. We communicate via data file to the FEOP office and give them the list of eligibilities, people that are eligible. FEOP has previously communicated to us that they will, when they approve a subsidy, they send HUB the information. We then, in turn, submit a premium billing to FEOP based on the numbers that they have given us. And FEOP pays their portion to the insurance companies. HUB pays any monies that we receive, which would be the employee dollars from the state, and a few of our home care workers itself pay their premium, as well as COBRA continuees. We submit that to the insurance companies. FEOP submits their premium to the insurance companies, and we work together to make sure that the money is exactly what it needs to be.
We have a follow-up.
Sure. So from the perspective of your organization, it is a payroll deduction to the home health care workers?
Representative Morgan, no. FEOP actually bills home care workers who are receiving the subsidy. They bill them monthly. to their home, and the home care worker pays directly to FEOP.
I see.
Their portion.
So there's somewhat of a high cost there for that process. I can see that how the process works. It seems kind of cumbersome, but I don't know how else you would do it.
Representative Morgan, it is somewhat complicated. It took us a year to figure out how to get it done. But we are very confident that we are working in the most streamlined method possible, and it seems to be working very smoothly.
Any other questions?
Well, thank you. And I have to say, you know, we'll have Noel, is it Lida?
Yes.
And Steve Doty come up next. But I just wanted to say that FEOP's one of my favorite programs. And hearing your stories, I mean, I just got back from having surgery myself, and the bills are almost to double my annual salary at this point. So without insurance, I don't know what I'd be doing. So. Thank you very much. And I'm very happy to hear that of this partnership. I'm sure I feel bad Rocky might have told me this when I met with him, but that's a perfect partnership for the home care workers, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would just say that it's been a pleasure working with the FEOP staff to put this program together.
Yeah.
Can I follow up? Thank you, Madam Chair. From Ms. Martin again, I've been thinking about your story. So you got attached to the FEOP program through an insurance agent?
I did. I never met the insurance agent. I was somebody that a friend recommended, and I called her on the phone, and we discussed mm-hmm. options, and she mentioned this. I would not have, my employer would not have made me aware of it.
And that was my question. I was just wondering if there was any material distributed.
No, and the thing that I found most astounding was that I asked, and the person at the time, I think Macy's is a bit different, but the person who had the job, the HR job at the time, said, if it's not a program we offer, it's not a program I represent. And I would say probably 90% of the people, perhaps more, were not insured there. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Representative.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Noel and Steve coming up.
Steve Doty?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, whenever you're ready, and just remember to identify yourself for the record, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Noelle Lida, and I'm actually a licensed insurance producer with the state of Oregon. So I help individuals, employees, and families obtain their health insurance policies. I help them research their plans, help them select a plan, and take them through the whole application process. I have personally worked with FEOP in three different areas that I'll go over quickly. The first is on the group health insurance side. With group health insurance premiums taking double-digit rate increases over the last several years, and employers only having to contribute 50 to 100% of the employee cost, not the dependents, but the employee cost, the employees themselves haven't really had much choice but to not add their dependents, or as I'm coming across the last few years, employees actually dropping their dependents from their group health insurance policies because they simply can't afford the health insurance premiums. It's just too expensive. The employers are doing the right thing by offering a group health insurance plan. The employees are doing the right thing by having and maintaining a job. It's just that the rates are too expensive. The average rates that we look for employees and their dependents can range anywhere from $200 to $600 a month or more, and their paychecks just aren't enough to cover those types of costs. That's where I say thank goodness to FEOP. FEOP steps in for qualified individuals and families to subsidize anywhere from that 50 to 95% of those health insurance premiums so that these employees can get their dependents covered and sometimes just even themselves covered without having to cut back their paychecks so drastically. The second step that I work with FEOP is on just individual health insurance insurance policies. These are for those who don't, who work for an employer who doesn't offer coverage, those students, caregivers of children, of elderly, those in between jobs, volunteers. I help these individuals, again, research their policies. As a standard example of an individual policy today, a family of four with a standard $500 medical plan averages a minimum of about $550 a month. The individuals still pay their monthly premium. They pay their $500 deductible per person, not a family deductible, but a per person deductible. They still have their 20% co-insurance, their co-pays for medications. The people that I work with, they anticipate their co-pays, they anticipate the co-insurance, they anticipate the deductible. It's the monthly premium when I'm talking to them that shocks them. I've had people cry on the phone. I've had people upset at my office as to what can they do about these health insurance premiums. And this is where I've referred so many people to the FEOP program to help them with subsidy assistance. If a family has that $550 monthly premium and qualifies for a 95% subsidy level, that drops that monthly premium down to $27.50. That's doable. They know they're still responsible for how their plan works. It's just that first hurdle of getting them through the monthly premium phase. It's these premiums that are stopping these folks at the door. They have somewhat of an income, but not enough, and it's sad when you know that it's a monthly premium that keeps somebody uninsured. The third way that I work with FEOP is through the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, and this is the guarantee issue plan, the high-risk plan for those individuals who are unable to qualify for a private plan because they have current or past medical conditions. Again, a standard example, a 45-year-old with a $500 deductible will pay $328 a month. A husband and wife or a two-party plan will pay $656 a month just to have the policy. Again, they're still responsible for how the policy works. That's just the monthly premium. The OMET members are the ones that I find need the most help. These folks have been uninsured. They've got chronic conditions. They can't afford the medical premiums. They need to get medical services now. They needed medical services a year ago. And they're currently and they're consistently going to the emergency room for help because that's the one facility that will treat them without having private insurance. It's the chronic conditions, the uninsured. It's sad, it's true, and it's prevalent in Oregon here. And again, it's the monthly premiums that are stopping these folks from pursuing coverage. We all know that the cost of these health plans are continuing to rise on all levels. That's not going to go away anytime soon. I go to lots of meetings, and it's just rising and rising and rising. And this is why FEOP is so vital in Oregon. It's the first step of help for our uninsured population because it gets these individuals and families over one of the most difficult hurdles, and that's the hurdle of this darn monthly insurance premium. These people are doing the right thing by working. They're doing the right thing by being students to further their education, by being caregivers in addition to many other volunteer activities or wage earning occupations. They want to have health insurance. They need to have health insurance. They've paid for health insurance in the past. They really have. It's just too expensive today, and they simply can't afford to take away from the household expenses. With FEOP having the ability to subsidize 50 to 95% of the health insurance premiums, now more than ever we need this program to grow and for us to be able to reach out to the uninsured population. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? very much. Thanks very much.
If I can make one comment on the question you had about the employer-sponsored coverage, one thing that we do, because I do work with group health insurance, that we try to get out to most employers, FEOP has wonderful stuffers for paychecks. And it's so easy to be able to let employers know this program is out and available. The literature's there. The material's there. We just need to get across to the human resource department to step outside of the box and realize there's people who, there's programs out there. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Doty?
Vice Chair Byrne, members of the committee, my name is Steve Doty. I'm also an insurance agent. I have my own agency in Portland. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters, which is a professional association for insurance agents like myself. I've been a past president of that organization. I also served for several years on the board for the Insurance Pool Governing Board before it became the Office of Private Health Partnership, and so I've been intimately involved with FEOP and been a big supporter of that. And I just want to reiterate the support that the agent community has for this important program. It's been outlined very well by some of the previous testimony about why it's important that people have this program. I would also like to touch on some things about why FEOP makes good financial sense for the state of Oregon. The primary reason, as was spoken to in the previous testimony, the primary reason people don't buy health insurance is because of the cost. And one of the biggest drivers of health care costs is the cost shift, that I'm sure you're well aware of. And there are two types of cost shift. One that comes from the uninsured population. Some studies have indicated that the cost shift caused by the uninsured is about 10% of the premiums that our clients are charged. The other cost shift comes from government programs who don't pay their fair share of the cost. Some studies estimate that those cost shifts are about 14 to 15%. Adding those two together, about 25% of the premiums that are charged by private insureds are a result of the cost shift. And FEOP solves both of those problems. It not only covers people who are uninsured, but it covers them with private insurance, so we don't have that government cost shift as well. So it makes good financial sense for people to be enrolled in FEOP. FEOP also receives an excellent match from the federal government. My understanding, it's about a 70-30 match. Over for 30 cents that the state puts in, the feds put in 70. And that's a very good match. And I also, it's my understanding that in past years, we have left some of that money on the table because there has not been enough money in FEOP. And that's sad given the fact that there is a huge waiting list of people who need health insurance and can't get it because there's not enough money in the FEOP program. And they could get it if the states simply stepped up and put the appropriate amount of money in, and the feds would match. The other thing that's important is that with private health insurance, people have access to more providers than they do under government programs. Rocky can correct me if I'm wrong when he offers his testimony, but the latest I heard was that there were about 4,500 people, children who were eligible for CHIP, who were actually covered under FEOP. And you have to ask, why would they choose to go under a private health insurance plan when they could get cheaper, which supposedly has better benefits, at a lower cost? And the reason for that is they have access to more providers. There are some areas of the state of Oregon that do not recognize, and they don't have providers that will contract with the Oregon Health Plan. And there's also some evidence that people not only have access to more providers, but they also have receive better treatment once they're in the doctor's office. There was a study in the Journal of American Medical Association that cited a study that they did where people actually received better treatment because they had private insurance than if they walked into the doctor's office with public insurance. So with private insurance, we're able to not only cover people, but get them access to better medical care. Also, FEOP covers families. I know that there's a proposal for healthy kids. It's something we support. We think it's great that we need to cover more kids. But there are also studies that show that parents don't take their children in to receive proper medical care if they don't have insurance themselves. And so it makes more sense to cover families than just kids. This program has been around for a number of years, and it's been very frustrating for me as I've spoken with legislators individually and also testified in committees to champion FEOP, and it seems to fall on deaf ears. And it's been a very, and particularly now with this session where we have several proposals that all are designed to cover the uninsured. And that's a worthy goal that we support because, as I spoke earlier, we understand the problem is caused by the uninsured. But people are willing to go out and create new infrastructure, create new bureaucracy, spend millions of dollars to set up these kinds of programs to cover the uninsured, and we have right in front of us a program that will already do it. The only thing it needs is money. Whatever passes out of this legislature this session is going to take time. It's going to be a number of years before any proposal actually hits the street and people are starting to be covered by these proposals. If we had money in the FEOC program, we can cover people immediately. All we need is money. We have the infrastructure in place. The Office of Private Health Partnership does a great job. The FEOC people do a wonderful job. It's already functioning. And the insurance plans are available. We simply need money. And if we had the money, we could start immediately because we have agents all over the state who are prepared and understand this program, and they can take it to everybody in the state who would be eligible. And so I would urge you to give this serious consideration that you continue to fund FEOP and also increase FEOP. I think significant funding for FEOP would go a long way to take a huge bite out of the number of uninsured we have in the state of Oregon. I appreciate your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
We have Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Mr. Doty?
Yes.
Thank you for your comments. It sounds like you've been involved somewhat in the health care reform initiative.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm on that committee, and we're going to have a hearing tonight. We're going to be considering some of the issues. We have a bill. We've combined some issues in the bill. We have an amendment to the bill. We're going to be talking about this. I think that you need to be directly involved in this discussion. I don't know that we're going to put more money into FEOP at the present time because we're really hurting for money. But I think that it's been said that several times in the committee that FEOP is something that we need to build around, and I think that we need to hear your organization give strong support to this concept, and we need to hear it soon. The hearing is at 5 o'clock tonight. It's not the end. As you say, it's going to be several years, but we're formulating a bill that will go to a committee and be passed out, and we need to sharpen some of the proposals that make sense, and I think what you said absolutely makes sense. So I would urge you, if you can't be at the committee, to give some written testimony, get it to the co-chairs, Bates, Westland, who are not here right now, with some suggestions. I think what you're saying makes the ultimate sense. That's the way we should be going.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Vice Chair Boone and Senator Morrison. I appreciate that. I'm not sure my schedule. I'll have to check and see. But we will. If not able to be there personally, we will make available some written comments to the committee.
Okay. Rep.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Doty. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name.
Lida.
Thank you both for being here. I think you play an important role in the system, and thank you for connecting people with insurance, especially FEOP, and in terms of assistance. You know, many states have premium assistance programs, and I think they do good work. You know, we have a challenge here in the state is one of the difficulties we have with FEOP, and the reason we had to close the individual market, is that the cost, it's if we have only X number of dollars and how many more people we can cover. I agree, I think we should raise the reimbursement in the health plan, and we deal with some of that issue, and I think that's why people go to the private market, because our reimbursement rates are low. I guess I want to talk about healthy kids. You know, one of the goals of that program is to build an existing health plan and FEOP. But we're talking about a third product, and I'm wondering if you have any feedback on how that would work, because the goal there being, you know, if we keep FEOP with group coverage, because I think that's one way to contain costs in FEOP, we're talking about a third product at higher incomes, kind of like a pooled product that families can purchase for their kids. Would you be interested in promoting that product? And I'm just wondering if you have any feedback on that part of the Healthy Kids Plan. Since that is a large part of, will be if we pass the funding for it, a large part of this budget in particular. Either one.
Representative Boone and Representative Kotek. I'm not that familiar with that third product, you know, the specifics of that. Is that an individual plan that was being created so that people would buy that individually? And it would be separate from what from the plans that are currently available in the individual market? What would the differences be? I guess I'm not sure why. Better benefits? Better underwriting?
Well, the
concessions?
The purpose would be to provide a product that has comparable benefits to what we provide in the health plan, but allow for greater access to the private market, so paying market rate reimbursement. The plan would be for the state to put out an RFP to ask for plans to apply to offer that product, and then parents above a certain income level, there'd be a sliding scale for subsidy, but then they could purchase that product for their kids. And so it's kind of an interesting public-private portion, and I don't mean to catch you off guard if you haven't looked into it, but kind of trying to reach that market, but in a different way.
Well, certainly, if a private product like that, regardless of what the benefits look like, if it's offered through insurance carriers, agents would be happy to be involved in that. I guess one of the advantages of using agents is that there are agents in every hamlet and city in the state of Oregon. There are government employees, and they would be able to work with the individuals to help them through the enrollment process and also assist them. Which one of the things that agents do is it isn't just sell insurance. We service them on an ongoing basis. If there are claims issues, we're there to step in and make sure that claims are handled appropriately. And that's one of the roles that we play, and we have a vested interest in doing that because we receive a commission, and if we keep our clients happy, then they continue to retain our services. So I think a short answer is just the agent community would be more than happy to market those plans and be involved in that process.
I would agree with Mr. Doty. If you're talking about a program where, again, we're reaching out to some families to make sure that their children can get coverage through the private insurance industry, as Mr. Doty had said before, there is a difference in care by having a private insurance policy services where you can go. And I think that the whole agent community is 100% supportive of any program out there where, again, children can get help with some insurance coverage.
Thank you.
And I have yet to, I wouldn't mind seeing some information. I'm not saying you would have it, but I do think we have an access issue around reimbursement rates in the health plan, so I'm not sure if it's a quality issue, but it's definitely an access issue. In terms of, and again, not to put you on the spot, but you have two agents that I haven't had a chance to talk to anyone, but on the Healthy Kids Plan, there's been a proposal that one of the issues we face in the state is we have uninsured children who are currently eligible for the health plan. And Healthy Kids would not only expand options at higher income levels for a private product, but also, try to get more children on the Oregon Health Plan and or FEOP. And one of the things that has been suggested is providing agents who, as you have just mentioned, are a already available network of outreach on plans, if we were to provide some kind of incentive, commission, stipend to also help promote the health plan. I was just wondering if that's something agents would be willing to do, the Oregon Health Plan. I mean, it depends on the circumstance of the family, but, our goal is to get the outreach out there and connect families with the program. I'm just wondering if there's an incentive similar to commission, if that would work for agents to get people on the health plan.
Yes, the short answer is yes. I think we would. I mean, we do some of that now with the with OMIP. We don't even receive a commission. There's a finder's fee that they pay. It doesn't really pay for our time, and we don't do it because we don't make any money selling OMIP. We do it because it's the right thing to do. It's a way for people to acquire coverage they wouldn't otherwise get. But so I think we would be happy to do that. I guess I have one question though, if I might ask. I'm not sure how much time we have, but it's my understanding with Healthy Kids that when a person that exceeds a certain percentage of federal poverty, I think it's 200%, that anybody under that would not have a choice between a private plan and the Oregon Health Plan. They would have to go on the Oregon Health Plan. Is that correct?
I think the goal is up to 200% of the poverty line to have the option of the health plan or FEOP, and concentrating on those existing systems, and then above 200% provide some premium sliding scale up for the private product.
Okay.
With the idea that, especially for low-income families, there's an existing set of, the managed care plans are good at working with that population. They've done it. They have the infrastructure. But FEOP would provide the private, so you'd have FEOP and the health plan at those income levels. That's the plan.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Okay, now we'll have Suzanne Mussolini. Is that right? And Ellen Lowe. And Kim Wirtz.
And welcome, and you choose who goes first, and just to remind you to identify yourself for the record. I think Ellen just has to say EL at this point.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susanna Mussolini, and I am the Benefits Administrator in the Human Resource Department of a nonprofit company called Partnerships in Community Living. We're based in Monmouth, and we help to support adults with developmental disabilities that live and work in the community.
Susanna, can I ask you to just speak up just a little bit, please,
yes,
to make sure that pull the mic there.
Our staff are eligible for insurance. We offer a plan through Kaiser Permanente. They're eligible for this plan once they've been working in a full-time position for a consecutive 6 months. The company, being a nonprofit, we are able to cover most of the cost of the premium on a monthly basis for the employee, but not for dependents. We routinely explain the FEOP program to our employees and encourage them to apply for FEOP subsidy. And in all honesty, FEOP is the reason why many of our employees who do cover their dependents are able to do so. The per month cost for employees to cover their dependents under our plan would cost them upwards of $650 per month, and that's just not something that they can afford to do. It is a deductible plan, and as someone else previously mentioned, they do understand that there are co-pays that they would pay on a monthly basis, and as someone previously said, it is monthly premiums that do hit them hard. When you can't afford to pay your rent, you can't even think about paying for monthly premiums for insurance for your families. When our employees are able to cover their dependents, it's simply one thing off their mind out of many. And FEOP allows that to happen. They're a very large part of that. That really helps to contribute to a happier workforce for us, a more stable workforce, so we're able to do our jobs better and provide supports that are needed much better. At last count, we had about 48 employees who were receiving FEOP subsidy, either for themselves or their families or both. And I just wanted to thank you for continuing to make that possible. And I'd be willing to answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ellen, welcome. Vice Chair Boone and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, and today I'm here maybe as part of the history of I call it the Rocky King shop, because it changes in function from year to year. I, like Steve Doty, was one of those who had the opportunity to serve on the insurance pool governing board. And there were times when some of the tasks that you gave us as a legislative body were not the most pleasurable ones. And I think I said publicly, so I'll repeat it again, that sometimes you asked us to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and it just didn't prove to be possible. But there were other things that you did that some of us really questioned at first. And I will acknowledge that I had some real questions about FEOP as it was originally proposed. But I would give a lot of credit to people like him, but particularly Rocky King and that staff, in being able to work through the legislation that you gave us and put together a system that is really responsive to a lot of Oregonians and their very basic needs, the means testing, the outreach. And there are a lot of assets, and you've heard of some of them, in having this available. For me, one of them was the opportunity for continuity of care, because I began to see that many people who came into FEOP, the reason they didn't stay was because of the stability that access to health care gave them. And that's part of that security, the means testing, then allowed them to move on in terms of their level of income. And because of the nature of FEOP, they were able to maintain their coverage then after the subsidy left. And I think that is one of the real assets, is that this is a beginning, and it's often one with a continuation. Healthy Kids initiative has been brought up. I think that as you work through that, you are going to be offering to very, very capable hands an opportunity to develop a program that is going to serve many, many Oregon families. And I just want to again express my confidence that in the way that staff under the direction, it's because I think there's a real collegiality, but you know the leadership of Rocky, that they are going to be able to work with carriers across the state in making sure that the product is adequate and it is going to offer an effective, medically effective package. But the other thing is that I know that outreach is part of the proposed budget, and I've watched what they have been able to do with pennies, and so again I have confidence that they will be able to work with some of us in making sure that the word gets out. I want to call your attention to something. When I was on the board, I used to ask questions all the time about the different percentages, and Kim will remember this. And so this is a product they have continued to have. And I would recommend that some of you might want to laminate that and take it to public hearings, because I constantly hear questions about what is the federal poverty level, what is 300% of the federal poverty level. And I've heard some statements in this building that are not exactly based in fact. And so I just would encourage you to really utilize that. And then the other is on the previous page of section 2, page 4, where it talks about the relative subsidy, because that's again where the mythology is not always reflective of reality either. But I just encourage you to continue to look to this particular office and to provide leadership in the kind of pilots that we seem to develop. And remember that one chart that John Britton said he didn't quite understand, but what it said to me was that when there's something that doesn't fit any place, give it to this office and I'll find a way of making it work. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions, Madam Chair?
Yes,
Senator. Thank you very much. Picking up on Senator Morissette's earlier question, Mrs. Lowe, about the place of FEOP within the health reform discussions now going forward in the building, your observations, please, given your history with FEOP, on where is the fit? And with that said, I go back to the question I asked yesterday. I was looking at the $1 million that the co-chairs have put into what will be a board that's linked to the health reform proposal. And my question was really about, well, could we invest that $1 million in FEOP? If we invested it in FEOP, would it get us more outreach? Would it get us more people covered? I'm asking two questions, and if you can respond to where's the fit?
Chair Boone and Senator Gordley, first of all, I think whatever comes out in the health reform bills, currently 329 and perhaps 27, is in the future in terms of implementation. Mm-hmm. And so I get impatient at my age, but yet I still know that it's going to be important to do some really good planning in order to put together a real reform of Oregon's health care system. And so there will need to be an investment in some kind of transitional board, or they use the term entity. I'm not sure what the term will be. But I really do see the kind of program that you have in FEOP as really maybe becoming part of that health insurance exchange. I don't think it's inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And I think it is extremely important that in the ways and means process, that you particularly look at the standard population and funding that, because I think that is another partner in making sure that we don't allow the system to fall apart while we're crafting what this new reform is going to be, because it's far more expensive to build something than to maintain and begin to rehabilitate it. It's a long answer, Senator Gordley, but that's why I always encourage this particular part of the building to be in contact with Hearing Room A, because we need some targeted resources.
If I may follow up.
Yep.
Heard any linkage between the reform discussions that are taking place now to FEOP? Are folks aware that there may be this connection or this opportunity?
Representative Boone and Senator Gordley, I heard it more during the interim. They really are still talking about basing it some way on insurance.
Okay.
And so that seems to be one of the trends of whatever is going to be the configuration of where we're going. And if you look at what's happened in other states, it's also.
Thank you very much.
May I add to that, please?
Please.
Okay. Yes. TRIOP is part of the discussion. It's not as big a part as it should be, but it is part of the discussion. And tonight is, and from now, the next couple of weeks is going to be very critical because they're going over the amendments and moving toward submitting the bill for passage and so on. But yeah, I think TRIOP is very much a part of the discussion and should be.
Before we move on to Ken, Alan, I'm just so honored, I have to say this, to be sitting even in a room with you. You bring so much to the discussion. I so appreciate it. And every year, every session, I think, I hope she doesn't retire.
Yes.
So thank you for being a huge part of our history and our future, too.
Madam Chair, yes. She uses the title Ellen the Elder.
Ellen the Elder.
That's
going to be a great segue for our introduction to somebody else in the room. Please, Kim, go ahead.
Thank you. As Chair Boone and members of the committee, my name is Kim Wartz, and I'm with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'm here with just a few brief comments on behalf of Regents in support of the Office of Private Health Partnerships and the FIAP program. Like you, I'm honored to be sitting next to Ellen. I've worked alongside Ellen for a lot of years in my work with Regents and our cooperative efforts with FIAP and the Insurance Pool Governing Board and the Office of Private Health Partnerships. I still can't get the new name right. And it is a
That's
privilege to be here.
That's why it's Rocky King's shop.
That's right. Rocky and the gang. Regents has a long-standing cooperative relationship with this office as well. We go clear back to the beginnings of the office and when it first was developed, and I believe 1987 is when it was born. The mission statement of this group outlines their goal to encourage self-reliance through participation in and the expansion of access to the health benefits system by removing economic barriers for uninsured Oregonians. Regents is committed to transforming health care, and we support the agency in their efforts to meet the goals outlined in their mission statement. Regents believes that to transform health care in Oregon, we must create an affordable, sustainable healthcare system that's built on the foundation of patient-focused competition, consumer choice, value-based purchasing, and shared responsibility for health and wellness. OPHP, FIAP, has created the working mechanism to provide the premium subsidies to low-income Oregonians through FIAP, and the program allows eligible individuals to purchase health plans available in the market by subsidizing those premium costs. Regents supports the program because it allows and encourages the public-private partnership, which we believe helps to maximize the dollars that are available, offers choices for FIAP members. They get to choose from the same menu of plan products that their neighbors or their family members or their coworkers are choosing from. It leverages state and federal funding to subsidize health plan premium, which addresses the cost issues that seem to be the greatest access barrier, and decreasing administrative costs, leaving risk management and plan administration functions to the insurance carriers. It simplifies and provides consistency in the consumer choice, requiring that those carriers who participate to apply all of the standard procedures and policies, including the important patient protection regulations. It creates availability of affordable options to small employers, and that encourages them to participate in the purchase of health benefits for their employees. It's a difficult process for them. It's a very expensive proposition for a small employer, and this program's given a lot of small employers the opportunity to do so. It also provides the outreach, the education, the resources to a wide variety of stakeholders across Oregon. That includes the important insurance agents. They're on the ground and they know these people personally. The insurance company staff, IPGB FIAP has come to our company and worked with our sales staff and the people that talk with the consumers to make sure that they're aware of the outreach programs that are available. Individuals, just making sure that they know what resources are there and what options are available to them. They do an amazing job of outreach and resource. We've been a participant and we've participated in projects and programs and board meetings and discussions and educational seminars over the years with OPHP. We've participated in programs that have achieved their intended goals, as well as investing in other options that maybe weren't as successful as we hoped they'd be. We think that this is an office that deserves the investment for by our company to provide the expertise that we can provide to help them achieve some of the interesting and unique options that they've been able to create and develop. We applaud the office, and we applaud their goals to strengthen that private-public partnership with the intent of removing those economic barriers. They're addressing the cost component of access to health benefits, and they're continuing their dedication to reducing the number of uninsured Oregonians. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, well, thank you, everybody, very much. And now, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? Okay, we need the drum roll. I can't imagine a better introduction than all you have provided today for Rocky the King.
Oh.
He's continuing on. Yeah, there, you had to remember that little comment.
Kind of like Kellen the Elder.
Kellen the Elder, Rocky the King. We've got quite a group here. So, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator of the Office of Private Health Partnerships, and I don't know about you, I'm going to get emotional here, my staff know that I do, but that was really nice for some of the things that were said about our staff and our programs, and hearing these stories was very heartwarming. So I will try to pick up where I left off yesterday, and as with yesterday, we have about 20 minutes, I believe, and we'll try to end it, I assume, Madam Chair, at an appropriate spot, close to 2:30, is that correct?
Yes.
That would be correct. I would like to start, I believe it's with Section 2 in the appendix. There are some statistics on page 6 and 7 that I would like to start with. I have to find them myself. You recall the pages before that, pages 4 and 5, were the subsidy charts and the federal poverty levels. Ellen made reference to those. We find them very helpful in sitting down with legislators, with clients, with businesses, so they can begin to see and sometimes work through what does 125% of the federal poverty level look like, not just on an annual basis, but a monthly basis and an hourly basis. One of the things that you find is someone working at minimum wage, that's working 40 hours a week, is not at 50% of poverty level. They're close to about 100% of the poverty level, or excuse me, 50% of the poverty level for a family of one. But when you get down to a family of two, that's closer to 100% of the poverty level. So the charts on page 4 and 5 sometimes are very helpful. So I'm going to turn to page 6 and 7. Give you kind of a picture of FEOP, and it's really two major components. On page on the left-hand side, page 6, are the FEOP program principles that we first put forth to the board and to the legislature when we started in 1997. We will do very much that same thing if and when Healthy Kids program is put into place. One of the first things we'll do is sit down working with DHS and our stakeholders to try to design a set of principles that everybody can kind of agree to, because that's what you really need to guide some of the policy and administrative and operational decisions. You can always refer back and say, does that own up to the principle of self-reliance? Does that own up to really respecting privacy? And so those principles to us are very important. On page 7, FEOP snapshot. This is of March 30. Every week we take a snapshot of where we are today. It is on our website. This is the one that really looked at where we were as of March 30. I want to kind of go through some of those figures so you can see a little bit about our program and who we serve. First of all, at the top, enrollment subsidy. Again, I'm on page 7, section 2, shows that we have about 14,800 people enrolled in the program, 65% of which have a 95% subsidy, and that means 125% or below on the federal poverty level. 19% have a subsidy of 90%. 70% of subsidy for about 11%. And 50% subsidy for only 4.3%. Now, one of the reasons that 50% subsidy is so low, and we're finding with healthy kids, is when you're between 100 and 185% of the poverty level, 50% subsidy, for example, for a group policy, just for the dependent coverage, may be, as you heard, $400 or $500 a month. And somebody having to pay for $250, 50% subsidy, is just too expensive. We also find that's true on the individual market. And that's why when we talk about the healthy kids, and I'll really talk in detail about our role in that from both the marketing and outreach perspective, as well as how the plan's designed and what place we're going to play in that on tomorrow. But you'll see that the more subsidy you pay at these income levels, the more participation you're going to get. There are two groups, really actually three groups that we provide coverage for. You can see that by market. The individual market, which has two components, the regular individual market and the high-risk pool, OMIP. For those people who can't get into the individual market because of a health condition, so we have both what we call the individual non-OMIP and individual OMIP. Then the group market. You'll notice, and I'll point this out a little bit here, that the median age for the individual market is 39. That is because of the influence of those that are enrolled in OMIP, where your average age is going to be about 50 for almost 3,000 members. Group market, the average age is a lot less, about 22 years of age, or 23, 24 years, but you have about 47% of those enrolled in the group market's FEOP subsidy that are children, so that very much influences it. If you go up just the line above that and you look at the average subsidies, our average monthly subsidy in the individual market is $249 per month per member. In the group market, it's $129. Overall, it's about $204, with members picking up on average about $21 of that. When we get into some of the individual markets, you'll be programs, individual versus group, you'll see that there's some wide variation in those costs. Overall, about 60% of those enrolled in the programs are female. If we turn to the next page, page 8, I really want to just briefly talk about a couple of things. In the middle, it's the geographical distribution of enrolled members. We pretty much follow the distribution as a percentage where people live in this state, except perhaps the southern south coast. That 19% of our enrollments is actually a little higher than what I think the number of people that live down there are. Otherwise, it's pretty well spread. The metropolitan Portland area as a percentage is actually less than, I think, those that live there. Below that is the ethnic and racial heritage of enrolled members. Kind of speaks for itself in terms of the figures there. There's kind of good news, bad news about those figures. The good news is that they pretty much reflect the general population of the state of Oregon. The bad news is they don't reflect the uninsured distribution in Oregon. Now, part of that is that we've never really, since the first few months that we started, I guess, marketed the individual. We've just let people come to us. So we haven't gone to the kind of communities that we probably will be going to with Healthy Kids, for example, to really target some of the ethnic and racial communities where there's cultural barriers, for example, to enrolling in private health insurance. And we'll talk about that when we get into some of the marketing. But you have to remember, this is kind of a freestanding on the individual side program, in that we haven't gone out and marketed it because we've always had waiting lists, and we're closed more often than we're open. interesting piece, though, is we do go out and work in the group market. That's where we spend most of our time, one at a time, trying to get them enrolled. The representation, for example, in the Hispanic community in the group market is higher than the individual market. And we think that that's because of some of the work our folks have been doing in the agricultural area and in some of the service industry area, where there is generally more Hispanic workers that might want to enroll. If you go over and look on the group side, which is on page 9, again, you'll see there's about almost 5,600 people enrolled. A little bit different distribution, less people getting the 95% subsidy, because generally when you work with an employer that provides group coverage, you're going to be working generally in a higher wage environment. So you're going to have less at 95%, more in the 97 and 50 as a percentage of your enrollments. The biggest barrier, anecdotal, that we have to enrolling people in group is that you really aren't getting those people from 150 to 300% because the subsidies aren't adequate, one, and number two, you only go up to 185. So it's very, very difficult if you're working full-time. You know, you're just at that 70 to 50% subsidy level, and that gets very difficult for family coverage. Most of the people that are enrolled in group coverage are dependents, either the spouse or children. As you can see, 46% are children. Usually the employer pays, I say usually, not all cases, 100% or the majority of the premium for the employee. Or when they come to us to get their family enrolled, the employees had coverage and thus is not eligible for a subsidy. They're really trying to get their dependents enrolled. If you look at the average cost, the subsidy per month for the group market, this is including self-insured, and we do pay COBRA, as one of the previous people that testified talked about. Members, on average, about $19. We pay about $129. For the subsidy, and the employer is paying about $103 to $104 on average. And that's for the both the employee, the spouse, and any children. If you took out the employee portion, the employer contributions generally are a lot less for the dependent coverage. If you turn over to the next page, you see again it's kind of the ethnic and racial heritage of enrolled members. I think it is interesting that again, they're small numbers. They probably again more reflect, I think, the general population of Oregon as opposed to the racial and ethnic heritage of the uninsured population. The individual market, this is the non-OMIP, is on page 11. Again, we have about 5,300 members. The majority of those are getting a 95% subsidy, again, meaning they're at 125% or less of the federal poverty level. Our subsidy per month is $196.50 on average, depending, again, on the amount of subsidy or the subsidy level that they're at. Like the group market, the individual market, we're close to 60% of those are female, where in the group market we had about 45 to 47% children. Here we have about 28% of the kids, and the average age is about 32. I think there's a lot of reasons why families choose FEOP as opposed to OHP for their kids. One is access, one is stigma, one is when we went back, and if you look back over the last few years, OHP CHIP was a 6-month eligibility. FEOP started very early with the principle that you needed to give people a year, and so we had been at 12 months. So there was some movement over to FEOP, I think, because of that. I don't think it's any one reason. I think it's a variety of reasons. There is continuity of care in the sense that some of these folks have relationships with provider systems or caregivers already in the private sector, whether it's Blue Cross, whether it's OVS, whether it was Kaiser, OD, you know, any of the private carriers. They just maintain that structure. They just went for a period of time without insurance. Probably on the next page, it gives you, again, the geographic distribution, the ethnic and racial Heritage, and some of the insurance plan distribution of the non-OMIP, we just call them the individual members, between Blue Cross and Kaiser, Pacific Care, ODS, Health Net, LifeWise, and Pacific Source. Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, you mentioned something about the administrative complexity of the group market. And, let me speak to the individual market real briefly. It's really simple. It works well. The insurance companies, we've got all set up electronically, monthly. They send us a bill. We have already sent the member the bill for the $10 or $20. When we get the bill, we get the money from the client. We match it with the federal state dollars we get, and electronic transfer. It's just all really done very, I think, efficiently. The group market offers a very different challenge for us because you have the employer dollars as well as our dollars. You have a variety of insurance companies, including self-insurance, where some companies are self-insured that just charge premiums to their individuals. When we first started, we determined somebody's premium was $500 and we're going to pay 70%, so we're going to send them a check monthly, $350. And we just, at the first of the month, we sent them a check for $350. It got deducted from their check and they were whole. No cash flow problems, nothing. We did it on the first of the month. It really caused a big disservice for a whole bunch of members. They would drop their insurance, not tell us, and all of a sudden they owed us money. Mm-hmm. Secondly, a lot of the folks that are in this program don't work full time. They work 20 hours one week, 30 the next, 10 the next, and employers' contributions towards that changed often. So one month they would contribute 200, the next month 100, the next month 300, based on the number of hours worked. So we reluctantly, and I say this because it put some of the cash flow burden on those clients. But what we decided to do is pay retrospectively. So when it is deducted, the premium share for an employee is deducted from their check. They can mail, fax, I think that's the only two ways, mail or fax that payroll deduction to us. And our goal is within 48 hours to get a check out to them. That's 48 business hours. So if we get it on Monday, hopefully, into Tuesday or Wednesday morning, there is a check reimbursing them for the amount that was deducted, less what their share would be. It's meant that a lot of people didn't go into collections because they got extra subsidies. It's meant that we weren't short or over, but it does provide some barrier to people getting even a week or 3 days of having $200 not in your check for low-income folks sometimes is hard. We continue to look at that and try to work with some employers to figure out, are there other ways that we can do it? I just wanted to respond to that.
Representative Cassette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rocky, are there ways, are there things that we could do to facilitate working with the employers? I mean, the advantage of the group market is there is an employer contribution, and which means our money goes further, we can cover more folks. Ideas of what we could do to help facilitate, are there statutory barriers? I don't, some of it is just accounting, but the employer contribution is important.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, there are some statutorial pieces that relate to liability of employers when people are found that they've, through fraud or abuse, have got into our program, and how do employers been really, the payments have been back and forth to us, and the deal is between us and the employer, so how do we go to the employer and collect the money? It puts the employer in a position of having to go to an employee and collect money. And I'm looking back there because those were issues that came up very early. I think most of it is just related to small businesses, because that's primarily that we're doing, don't want to get involved in a whole bunch of paperwork and billing. They're willing to give information. They're willing to sit down and do that, but fronting up money, billing us, creates just additional work for those folks. It's a challenge we just need to take on more seriously, I guess, over the coming years, and or not more seriously, but revisit after the work walls we ran into when we first started.
Thank you.
I really appreciate this discussion because I think this is not unlike a discussion that takes place with any kind of a program where you're trying to apply it in a massively diverse bunch of situations out in the real world and make it be cost-effective and timely and honest for everybody. And that the I don't know that there's ever going to be a silver bullet. But I don't know that there's ever going to be one solution that isn't going to cause as many problems for people as it is going to make a perfect world for people. And it is a huge challenge in all facets of public service delivery, particularly medical type stuff, but also safety stuff and tax stuff. And it's an interesting discussion to get into because it seems like every potential solution has also its set of potential downsides to it. So it's interesting to be involved in it, but very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And the electronics of that have evolved, the ability to use computers and electronic transfers and things like that have really helped a lot, but the capacity of the private sector to deal with that is very up and down. There's not an even a cross ability to deal with the technology side of it either.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. I carried a bill on the floor of the Senate last week that one member of our committee voted against. It was to allow the state to, in some cases, to recoup money that was paid out fraudulently, and there are several specific situations where that occurred. Well, the objection was the state does not conduct its business as a private sector company would do, and they send money to the client with the expectation the client is going to do the right thing with the money. And that isn't always the case, and that's what you're talking about, and it's a rather significant amount of money that we're dealing with. And so this is very complicated, and I'm not sure that there is a perfect solution, but getting money to the person who the money is supposed to ultimately go to would be, I guess, the ultimate solution, if it's possible. If the money is in payment for a service on behalf of a client, the money goes to the electric company, to the physician, to the whomever, from the state directly. The upfront, well, I know that's going to become an issue because the discussion on the floor, even though the bill did pass, there were some objections raised, and I'm sure that we're going to be looking at the way the state does conduct that type of business. So if you have any insights into that in your area, that would be interesting. That would be good.
Madam Chair, I'm going to finish with charts 13 and 14, which gives us, I think, a logical place to stop for today and to pick up tomorrow. Again, the third kind of component, the individual market that own it, the high-risk pool. These are people with chronic health care conditions who are denied coverage in the individual market or who have no portability option. For example, they've left a company and moved to another area, and there is no way to get their portability coverage, and they've exhausted COBRA, as we talked, one of the previous people talked about. There's some differences about this in the individual market. First of all, there's about 3,700 folks in there. Our average premium is about 60% higher than our individual market, where we're about $196 for the, I think it was $196 for the individual. This is about $314. That reflects primarily an older group that are in this program. In the individual market, it's age-rated, so a kid's going to pay $100 and adult's going to pay $300, $400, older age person like myself. So if you look down age by market, you'll see that where the others had 46% kids, 27% children, this one only has about 4.5%, but 44% of those enrolled in the program are above the age of 50, and of which about 67% are female. These are folks with diabetes, with multiple sclerosis, with cancer, high blood pressure, heart disease, whatever it is, that are low income, can't afford access. Some of these were on OHP standard at one point, who had to turn to the high-risk pool to get their coverage. And it is probably for I manage both programs, the high risk pool as well as FEOP, and bringing these two together is one of the most heartwarming experiences that I have as a state worker, because these are folks, again, that face day-to-day challenges with chronic health conditions. Let's turn over to the backside again. The gives you kind of the geographical distribution all over the place. It's interesting, the southern south coast, where overall FEOP is at about 19%. It has a higher number of high-risk people down in the southern and south coast area. And in the metropolitan area, it has fewer. And part of the reason for this, we believe, is the availability of group coverage in the metropolitan Portland area as opposed to some of the other regions. Ethnic and racial heritage, again, follows, I think, the general percentage throughout the state, not of those that are uninsured. So with that, Madam Chair, that kind of is section two, and I would hold off and answer any questions and pick up, I guess, tomorrow.
Representative Kursak and Senator West.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and working I could be surprised, but one of my favorite topics is sustainability of funding and the use of the SCHIP dollars. And on page three of your stat pack, it talks about the funding sources for FEOP. I have no desire to not have the funds to serve adults on FEOP. However, I'm concerned about discussions at the federal level that there's reluctance to allow states to use their SCHIP match for folks other than children. And they might go to parents, but adults without children could be an issue. And I'd really like to see a breakdown of, by funding source, how we are paying for the different folks on our program. Are we using, what kind of dollars are we using to cover the OMIP adults? What kind of dollars are we using to cover different parts of our FEOP population? Because if the feds say you can't do that anymore, we're going to be in trouble, because 80% of our match rate comes from SCHIP. But that's not the bulk of, mostly adults are on FEOP. So, I don't know if you, I'm sure you don't have it handy, but it's something we need to talk about.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, first of all, we're not impacted by some of those decisions because we're operating under a waiver currently. So we're not in trouble, but we face a challenge and some serious policy questions that will be coming forward. We can provide you the breakdown, I believe, by populations of the there's a few general fund folks that we grandfathered in. There is will be people on Title 19, Title 21. We can, I think, identify both the kids and adults that are related to that, and we'll be happy to provide that to you. But you are correct. This is a serious policy issue. The nice thing is that we always have the 19 funding for the adults, and we're going to run out of the 20 funding, and that's why Healthy Kids is basically Title 19 funding almost 100%. I think it is 100%.
Okay.
So we'll get the chair and through the chair all the figures for you on that.
Well, very quickly, this may have been covered earlier. I was in the room part of the time. What's the maximum amount of federal funds we could get if we decided to put more state money in?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, you're talking about more money into FEOP?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to assume that you would use the Title 19 funds because we're going to run out of the Title 21 funds, so it would be a 60-40 match. So it's for every 40 cents.
Unlimited if we put five.
Well, there are some
billion dollars in, we would get a 60-40.
Well, there are some caps.
So that's what I'm talking about.
I don't know what those caps are. Do we have?
I think I heard the other day that there's like a almost over $1 billion.
Well, the amount of federal funds available to us, I think, is very high.
Well, if we're talking about expanding a very important program into our health reform thing, it would be interesting to know how much money, just how much money we could get if we decided to use FEOP as one of the main sources.
Madam Chair, Senator Morsette, we'll work with Department of Human Services and try to get you some general figures on that.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Further questions, Mr. King? We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Good morning, Smith.